Chapter 6. When Arthur gets up the next morning, the first thing he sees in the mirror is his own swollen lip. Everything about the night before comes back to him in a rush, and he can't face his own reflection a moment longer. He can hardly believe what happened. If it weren't for his lip, he'd think it was a dream he had. There was no justification for it, no way he could pretend it was a part of some greater plan to subdue or manipulate Merlin. There had been nothing strategic or premeditated about the heat that had coursed through him last night, the desperate want and desire that clouded his senses. And then the sudden come down, seeing Merlin expose himself like that and knowing that he could never do the same. The scar in his stomach wasn't the only thing standing in the way of truly letting himself be vulnerable with another human being. The look on Merlin's face when he had walked away. He regrets leaving him like that, but then he imagines what Uther would say if he knew what had happened and his blood runs cold. He takes Merlin's breakfast down earlier than usual, praying he'll still be asleep and Arthur won't have to face him. He tiptoes into the cellar, quieter than he's ever been. Merlin doesn't wake as he unlocks the cell and sets the breakfast tray just inside the door, as soundlessly as possible. Arthur takes a second to study the other man. He's lying facing the bars, chin tucked into his body. The blanket had slipped down to his waist and he's shivering slightly. Arthur frowns, wondering if Merlin needs another blanket down here, if he's warm enough at night. He's walking over to readjust the cover before he can even think about what he's doing, and he stops dead when he does. What is going on here? At least he could pass last night off as some kind of crazed fumble, but it's the cold light of day now, and the way he's just pulled the blanket up to wrap around Merlin's shoulders is an undeniably tender action. There had been tenderness last night too, though. That final kiss. Arthur shakes his head, leaves the cell. Once upstairs, he decides to get out of the house altogether. Uther will be calling in a few hours anyway. He may as well go into town and wait for him. He can't stay here right now. He feels trapped. When he gets to town, he settles on the top floor of a narrow, chintzy little cafe where he'll be able to hear anyone coming. He flips open his laptop and scans the BBC news headlines first, as he always does to see if there's anything new about Merlin's kidnapping. But there's nothing there, and he's about to click off the site when he sees a subheading under the politics section. MP for Halifax makes passionate speech against microchipping. Warily, Arthur clicks onto the article. Fellowship MP for Halifax, Mordred Barrett, made an impassioned speech at a fundraising rally in Manchester yesterday, calling for an end to anti-magical regulation. A week before Parliament votes on the proposal to outlaw microchipping of magic users, Barrett urged his colleagues to put aside prejudice and vote for a Britain in which all people are valued and respected. Although Barrett made no direct reference to the kidnapping of Merlin Emrys in his speech, it is believed that Arthur doesn't bother to read past that point. He's seen enough to know that Mordred has apparently come out swinging in favor of ignoring the ransom note, and that Uther will be very unhappy indeed. As though summoned by Arthur's thoughts, a text message from Uther appears in his inbox.
Call me. We need to go over some things.
Arthur heaves a sigh and dials his father's number. He's lucky that his floor of the cafe stays empty as Uther keeps him on the phone for over 2 hours. He spends the first hour making Arthur recount pretty much every single thing that's happened since he arrived at the house. Unsurprisingly, Arthur's version of events is highly edited. After that, He makes Arthur go over practically every Arkstone protocol that exists, and then starts quizzing him on magical containment strategy. It's bizarre. He hasn't had to know some of this stuff for years, and it's beyond irritating when Uther tries to school him on something he learned when he was 10 years old. Eventually, he's had enough.
I should be getting back to the house, if there's nothing else,
he puts in when Uther finally pauses for longer than 2 seconds.
Just one more thing. There's been an unfortunate development.
Barrett's speech, Arthur asks resignedly.
So you've already seen it?
Uther sounds mildly surprised, as though he thinks Arthur spends his time on the internet playing Farmville on Facebook or something.
Yes,
Arthur says a little testily. Uther's tone is suddenly brisk.
Well, you know that this kind of insolence can't go unpunished. His lot are clearly goading us. They need a reminder of who they're playing with.
Arthur doesn't venture a suggestion. He knows his father isn't asking for ideas. Arthur wouldn't be trusted to make one anyway.
What kind of reminder?
A visual one. I trust you've already found the video camera and tripod in the cupboard below the stairs?
Yes,
Arthur lies fluently.
Good. Set it up and record yourself giving the boy a good beating. Then upload it and email it to me. I'll see that the Institute gets it, and the media too. Should help them remember where their priorities lie.
Arthur barely hears the last few words. A sort of sick haze has engulfed him.
Is that really necessary? He asks, fighting to keep his tone even. Seems like Barrett was just sounding off.
It was an act of defiance, and we will be weakened if we don't respond in kind.
Wouldn't that just be stooping to their level?
It's called fighting fire with fire, Arthur, and it's more than necessary at this stage.
Uther's voice is dangerously low.
Yeah, but...
Enough!
Uther unexpectedly roars down the line. Arthur prepares himself for the lecture of a lifetime, but when Uther speaks again, his voice is strangely calm.
I had hoped you'd step up to the plate for once. It gives me no pleasure to be proved right in this instance.
What do you mean, proved right?
I knew you'd make excuses, try to dodge your responsibilities, so I put a backup plan in place.
There's a sick weight forming in Arthur's stomach.
What kind of backup plan?
I sent Val and Senred instead.
Sent?
Arthur's already on his feet, shoving his laptop into his bag, running towards the stairs. Uther can clearly hear him scrabbling, because he says,
You're too late. They should have arrived by now.
You were keeping me talking.
Arthur hisses as he bolts out of the cafe, ignoring the shocked faces of the waitstaff.
I wouldn't have had to do that if I could have trusted you to follow my instructions.
Uther sounds totally unrepentant, and suddenly Arthur can't handle talking to him for a second longer. He hangs up, breaking into a sprint as he heads towards the car. His heart thuds in his ears all the way back to the house, his grip on the steering wheel so tight his hands hurt. It's a 30-minute drive, and he hates every second of it.
Too long, too long, too long.
He curses himself for not knowing Uther was up to something. Why else would he have stayed on the phone for so long? It's not as though he's ever wanted to spend that much time with Arthur before.
Idiot, idiot, idiot.
He drives as fast as he legally can, trying to focus on the road and cut off his thoughts, which are all around Merlin and what Val and Senred could do to him, given the chance. When he finally sees the house in the distance, he increases his speed to over 80. There's no one around for miles anyway. He nearly skids and crashes when he reaches the pebble terrain, but he doesn't care. He's out the car and running towards the house, bursting in and rushing towards the open cellar door down the stairs. At first, all he can see is Val and Senred, with their backs to him. They turn around, parting slightly, to reveal... Merlin's lying on the floor, curled onto his side. There's blood pouring from a wound on his hairline. His left hand is cradled to his chest, two of the fingers bent at sick angles. His eyes are half open, unseeing, dazed with pain. He looks small and fragile, and so far from the all-powerful threat that Uther always said magicals were. When Arthur speaks, his voice is like he's never heard it before.
Get out of my house!
Senrid giggles involuntarily and then stops, like he's just beginning to understand the look on Arthur's face. But Val squares up to him.
Why? Because we did our jobs when you couldn't?
Get out of my house, Arthur says again, and it's very quiet. The sneer is still on Val's face, but Senrid tugs at his arm slightly.
Val, we have to deliver the film to London anyway.
No rush, Val says, eyes fixed on Arthur.
If you don't leave right now, Arthur says, slowly and deliberately, I will make you regret it.
Val's face twists into something ugly.
You're becoming a liability, mate. Anyone would think you cared about a little magical freak.
Arthur can't say what he wants to say, which is that Merlin isn't a freak, that he hasn't done anything wrong, he never had, that maybe they were the ones in the wrong all this time. He can't, because if he says that, they'll go straight to Uther and he'll be replaced in hours. He has to play it tactically. He has to act the big man. He stands up to his full height, puffing out his chest.
This is my operation. You understand me? My fucking operation. I will do it my own way, or I won't fucking do it at all.
You didn't!
I brought us this fucking far, didn't I?
Arthur's voice is rising on every word.
I knocked him out, tagged him, brought him up here, kept him alive. Everything Uther asked me to do. I would have done this too, and I bet it would have been a damn sight cleaner and more efficient than your brand of indiscriminate thuggery, Valiant.
Val steps forward, eyes flashing, but Arthur refuses to quail.
My father shouldn't have brought you in. I don't want you here. I don't like you.
His voice is cold, dangerous.
So you better leave now, before I really lose my temper.
If you think, Val, let's just fucking go, Senrid interrupts. HQ's expecting us, come on.
He's taken the memory card from the camera and he's waving it in front of Val, shooting nervous glances at Arthur. Val is still staring him down, but there's a tiny bit of fear in his eyes. Arthur can see it. He holds his gaze, steely-eyed, and Val is the first to look away.
Fine, whatever.
They're nearly at the top of the stairs when Val gets his parting shot in.
You're as pathetic as Amorous, mate. You deserve each other.
Arthur nearly goes after him then, rage coursing through him, but he forces himself to remember who the priority is here. It's the injured man lying on the floor, so he says nothing and waits for the cellar door to slam behind them. He listens for the front door to open and close, then a further 20 seconds to hear the sound of the car driving away before he lets himself move. He goes straight to Merlin, dropping onto his knees beside him. He can't tell if Merlin knows he's there. His eyes are still completely unfocused.
Merlin. Merlin is okay. They've gone now.
Arthur's already scanning Merlin's form, trying to figure out which injury to prioritize.
I need you to tell me where it hurts.
Merlin mumbles something, but Arthur can't hear it, so he leans in.
What?
Please.
Please what?
Arthur says urgently. God, there's so much blood.
Please don't.
Merlin's words are very slurred. Arthur wonders if he's concussed.
Don't. Please don't hurt me.
Arthur tenses.
I'm not. I would never.
He doesn't think Merlin understands. He reaches out a hand to touch Merlin's shoulder, and the man shies away, trying to curl in on himself.
No!
He croaks out.
Merlin, it's me. It's Arthur. I won't hurt you. It wasn't me before. It wasn't me.
It's no use. Merlin seems to be trying to make himself as small as possible, although even the slightest movement obviously pains him. Arthur doubts Merlin can even recognize him right now, let alone make the distinction between him and the men who were beating him before. He can't fix that right now. He has to concentrate on the physical and worry about the mental later.
Merlin, he says as calmly as he can, I need to check where you're hurt. Can I do that?
Merlin doesn't respond, but he half raises his uninjured hand as if to protect his head.
I'm not going to hurt you, Arthur says in the same clear, even tone. I'm just going to make sure you're not injured.
Arthur's been taught enough about first aid that he can at least do a basic check. The problem is getting close enough to Merlin to look him over without scaring him. He decides to announce everything he does before he does it, in the hope that some part of Merlin comprehends. But first, he pulls his jumper off and tucks it under Merlin's head to try and give him some modicum of comfort.
I'm just going to check and see if you hit your head, he says softly.
He starts feeling around Merlin's head, fingers coming away sticky with blood as they brush up against a gash in his hairline. Arthur can't tell how bad it is, whether Merlin's exhibiting symptoms of concussion or just shock. He resolves to come back to that later, and not to let Merlin fall asleep in the meantime. Next, he decides to check if Merlin's breathing is okay, make sure that he doesn't have a punctured lung or anything like that. He doesn't want to touch him unnecessarily, so he just listens for a few moments. Merlin's breaths are ragged, but they don't sound constrained.
Can you breathe all right?
He asks softly. He doesn't exactly receive a nod in return, but there is some small sign of assent there that tells him he's probably right in his assessment. He files it away to check on again when Merlin's slightly calmer. The fingers are the next obvious port of call, but Merlin still has his left hand curled protectively into his side.
Can I see your hand, Merlin?
Arthur asks steadily. Merlin shakes his head almost imperceptibly, drawing the damaged appendage further into his chest.
I will need to look at it at some point so I can make sure it heals properly,
Arthur says, hoping to coax Merlin into complying. He reaches out tentatively, and Merlin whimpers, drawing back as much as he can. Arthur freezes guiltily.
All right, all right.
He does a quick check of the rest of Merlin, able to satisfy himself that there doesn't appear to be any obvious broken bones or bleeding. Internal injuries are something that he can't judge. He needs Merlin to come back to himself and tell him where it hurts. But he doesn't know how to get through to him. He thinks for a minute or two, and then decides direct communication is the only way.
Merlin, I need to get you clean so I can patch you up.
Merlin doesn't respond.
To do that, I have to get you upstairs, which means I'll need to carry you.
Merlin shakes his head. Don't touch me, he rasps.
Listen to me, Merlin. Just focus on my voice for a second.
Arthur pauses, unsure how to go on.
I'm sorry this happened. If I'd been here, I would have stopped it. I promise you that I didn't have anything to do with it, and I don't want to hurt you any further. I only want to help.
Merlin's eyes flicker slightly, and then look up to meet Arthur's, just for a second.
Will you let me help?
There's a long silence. Just when Arthur's bracing himself to lift Merlin anyway and deal with the reaction, Merlin uncurls his body slightly.
Yes,
he whispers. A wave of protectiveness hits Arthur, sudden and fierce. He finds himself overwhelmed by the fact that Merlin's choosing to trust him when so far Arthur's brought nothing but pain into his life.
Okay,
he says.
Okay. Wait right here. I'll get everything ready.